ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13, Text Number 19. Atha katanchit sa vimukta apada punascha sartham pravishatyarindamam. Advanyamushmin ajaya niveshito brahmanjano dhyapina veda kaschanam. Atha katanchit sa vimukta apada punascha sartham pravishatyarindamam. Advanyamushmin ajaya niveshito brahmanjano dhyapina veda kaschanam. Atha katanchit sa vimukta apada punascha sartham pravishatyarindamam. Advanyamushmin ajaya niveshito brahmanjano dhyapina veda kaschanam. Please chant. Ladies, please. Atha, from this, katanchit, somehow, saha, he, vimukta, liberated, apada, from the danger, punacha, again, saartam, taking interest in that life, pravishyati, begins, arimdama, O king, killer of the enemies, advani, on the path of enjoyment, amushmin, that, ajaya, by the influence of the illusory energy. Naveshita, being absorbed. Brahman, traveling. Jana, the conditioned souls. Adya api, even up to death. Excuse me. Naveda, does not understand. Kaschana, anything. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. O killer of enemies, Maharaj Ruhugana, if the conditioned soul somehow or other gets out of his dangerous position, he again returns to his home to enjoy sex life, for that is the way of attachment. Thus, under the spell of the Lord's material energy, he continues to loiter in the forest of material existence. He does not discover his real interest even at the point of death. Please repeat. O killer of enemies, Maharaj Ruhugana, if the conditioned soul somehow or other gets out of his dangerous position, he again returns to his home to enjoy sex life, for that is the way of attachment. Thus, under the spell of the Lord's material energy, he continues to loiter in the forest of material existence. He does not discover his real interest even at the point of death. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. This is the way of material life. When one is captured by sexual attraction, he becomes implicated in so many ways and cannot understand the real aim of life. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.31 says, Nate vidu svarthagatim hi vishnum. Generally, people do not understand the ultimate goal of life, which is to what? To serve and to love Vishnu, Krishna. Well, the Prabhupada is not saying that, but that is what is meant. As stated in the Vedas, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pasyanti Suraya. Those who are spiritually advanced simply look to the lotus feet of Vishnu. The conditioned soul, however, not being interested in reviving his relationship with Vishnu, becomes captivated by material activities and remains in everlasting bondage, being misled by so-called leaders. Atakatanshit savimukta apada punascha sartam ravishatarindamam advanyamushmina jayani veshitu brahmanjano dhyapina veda kashinam. O killer of enemies, Maharaj Ruhugana, if the conditioned soul somehow or other gets out of his dangerous position, he again returns to his home to enjoy sex life, for that is the way of attachment. Thus, under the spell of the Lord's material energy, he continues to loiter in the forest of material existence. He does not discover his real interest, even at the point of death. Om Agina Timirandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances at his lotus feet. Before beginning, as usual, I pray for the blessings of all the devotees assembled here and in internet land, that I may say something useful and beneficial for everyone concerned, especially for myself. So here we have a very, very interesting verse. As we may know, just to recap, Jud bought it, who is disguised as a person who's very lowly. His clothes are threadbare, they're dirty, his body is dirty. He looks like just some very low-class person. And yet he has done that deliberately so that people will not bother him, so that he may be able to stay within his own heart and continue to see the form of the Lord in his own heart without interruptions. Generally, people do not bother with or get involved with or associate with persons who look very lowly, slovenly, uninteresting, imbecilic, retarded. They're called, you know, they're considered not persons who can, as we say, benefit us. So people leave them alone, and that's exactly what he wanted to do. Actually, he was among the most learned in the world. Jud-Bodit was a fully realized soul. He knew who he was. He knew why he was here. He knew the goal of life, which is to achieve pure love of God through devotional service. And he was always involved in this procedure. Never once, never for a moment, did he not think of Krishna. Never once, not for a moment, did he not remember the teachings. He had had a hard lesson to learn in his previous life. As we know, he was born as a result of attachment to a deer. He was born as a deer in his previous life. He had saved a little fawn from drowning in a river and then became so attached to that little fawn that he was always thinking about him to such an extent that he forgot all of his spiritual practices. And he was a person who was on a very high level, which we call the bhava plane, which is the ecstatic plane, or one step away from Krishna prema, pure love of God. And yet he became attached to this little fawn, could not meditate because he was always thinking of the comfort of the fawn. Maybe the fawn was being attacked by a wolf or a lion or a tiger. So he was always trying to shelter it as one might shelter his own son or daughter. And therefore, because he died thinking of a deer, his next birth was that of a deer. And this was a very great bring down, a very great fall down, because here is a person on a very, very high spiritual level who takes an animal birth. This is unheard of. But for persons who become attached to their animals and feel that their animals are all in all, and they feel that they are the shelter of those animals, and that those animals depend upon them for security, then what happens is that a person becomes attached to that creature. And as the result of that attachment, as Krishna says, whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. So here we have Jud-Bodit remembering those two verses very, very well. He knows that if he remembers Krishna, he will go back home, back to Godhead at the final day. Not only at the final day, but right now he's already there. So he merely steps into another room of the same mansion in which he is dwelling, namely the transcendental mansion. His position or his path is a very unusual one. This does not mean that we should all put on tattered clothes, roll in the gutter, and put lots of filth all over our faces. and look like an imbecile. I don't know how far our preaching will go with that particular kind of outfit. It might be counterproductive. But this was the need of Judd Barrett. And our need, we have been given a different process. And so the process that we have to pursue is to not especially call attention to ourselves, you know, in that way, but rather just perform devotional service, especially by hearing the holy name and chanting the holy name and sharing that holy name with as many people as we possibly can. Because it is in giving that we receive. And when Krishna sees that we are giving out this spiritual knowledge, he is very pleased. He's satisfied. And he reciprocates with the devotee. And how does he reciprocate? Krishna being within the heart area as the super soul, injects the soul with his love. And when the devotee receives that love, he feels uplifted. He feels enlivened. He feels strengthened. He feels peaceful. This is the result of Krishna's love injected into the heart, into the soul. So it is a very definite experience. It is a very clear, concrete experience. And as a devotee grows in spiritual splendor, in humility, self-sacrifice, modesty, surrender, as the devotee grows in these very wonderful devotional qualities, the Lord takes notice and continues to inspire him, uplift him, and transport him to the spiritual realm of Krishna consciousness. And so that person is actually, although living in this world, but is not really of this world because his consciousness is completely different. He's unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken, unruffled by the things that happen in the world because he's in touch with the Supreme Peace. In other words, his mind, his intelligence, and his senses are completely merged in the complete peace, the complete joy, the complete strength, the complete freedom. Therefore, he's not affected, not disturbed, not shaken, just as Krishna isn't. It's like a little child who normally might be afraid of some of the difficulties or troubles or trials in material life. Might be afraid, but if his father stands in front of him and he says, "You don't have to worry, I'm protecting you, I'm defending you, you just stand behind me." Well, the kid feels protected. He doesn't have any fear now because his big daddy is now in front of him and will take care of him. Similarly, a devotee who is completely centered, completely filled, completely saturated with Krishna's love, then that person feels protected, feels secure. Even if there are difficulties, even if there are tribulations, even there are trials, he's not affected. Now, in this particular verse, we have a very interesting point that's being made. And it's one that we can all take heed of because many of us have seen what happens. In the verse that is mentioned, if the conditioned soul somehow or other gets out of his dangerous position, he again returns to his home to enjoy sex life, for that is the way of attachment. Many persons, as a result of despair, depression, anxiety, uncertainty, doubt, turn away from the material life and come to a spiritual organization such as this and look for shelter, look for succor, look for help, guidance, direction. And these books give this. Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully come here with that very one-pointed goal to give us this mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you give it to everyone, irrespective of his race, his age, his class, his caste. Give it out indiscriminately. So this means everybody gets the mercy. Whether everybody accepts the mercy is another matter. But it is out there for everyone to receive and to become transformed by. And that is a very wonderful, wonderful blessing. And those of us who know the value of this blessing will treasure it, will cherish it, will hold it very, very close. And in holding it close, we'll try not to let it slip away. So in this verse, we find that many people come and they begin to engage in the process of devotional service, chanting Krishna's holy name, observing four regulative principles such as not eating of meat, fish, or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication. What's the fourth one I left out? No illicit sex. So they give up these. They go for 6 months, a year, 2 years, sometimes 10 years. Gives them up. But what happens sometimes is that a person becomes very complacent, very sure of himself. Maybe gets a little position. Maybe becomes somebody in the movement. And he becomes complacent, very sure of himself, very confident of himself, and begins to forget that he is a servant of the Supreme Lord. That is our only business here, to serve Krishna and to identify ourselves as the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of Krishna. Just as the as we are expected to do. So when we think of ourselves as a servant, and a servant is considered lowly, and we don't think of ourselves as big, as grand, as great, as important, as significant, when we think of ourselves simply as a loving servant of the Lord, here for no other purpose than to develop pure love of Krishna, when we think in those terms, Krishna is always very merciful to such persons. He's always, because such persons are very dear to him. They are exhibiting or expressing unconditional love. That kind of love that Krishna thrives on. He doesn't need food. He doesn't need clothing. He doesn't need shelter. He doesn't need property. He doesn't need any form of opulence or wealth. He's got it all. And he's always blissful. So you really can't make him happy except one way. The way we can make Krishna happier than he already is. He's always happy. That's his nature, to be blissful. And when a devotee is fully Krishna conscious, he too is blissful because he's in complete tune, in harmony with Krishna. So the way Krishna's happiness increases is by pure, unconditional, undemanding love to Krishna. And when Krishna sees this person is giving his whole heart, he's giving his life, he's giving his all, without any condition, without any strings attached, without any desires to get something back, knowing full well that he sees me as the end-all and be-all, as the highest, the greatest, the best. And therefore, he doesn't care about getting anything because he knows that in giving, he's getting everything. So such a devotee is very dear to Krishna. And when a devotee becomes dear to Krishna, he becomes ever increasingly blissful. And sometimes this bliss, it exhibits itself in the form of different symptoms. He may become stunned. He may perspire profusely. He may horripilate like the hairs on the arms and on the head. They may go up. The color on the face may become blanched or light. He may tremble. His voice may falter. Can't speak. So these are different. Or he may faint, may pass out, just transported to the spiritual world, because the image of Krishna is so full blown in his mind that the material world has no significance or value to him. And in love with Krishna, he totally submerges himself in Krishna and feels love for Krishna. And lives with Krishna as a loving servant. So these are different symptoms of devotional love, which we don't aspire for the symptoms. We aspire to love Krishna. The symptoms come as a byproduct of the action or the process. The process brings the prayojana, the final result. So a person may become very complacent in Krishna consciousness, and then he may become very careless. He may become very indifferent. He may regard devotees, because he has achieved a little bit of a position, a little bit of mercy from the Lord, some blissfulness, some peacefulness. He may begin to think of himself as superior to them. And in thinking he's superior, he may begin to actually make offenses against them. He may talk down to a devotee. He may blaspheme a devotee. Or he may even begin to regard these books as really not so important. He may think, well, I don't really need the books. I can get it directly from Krishna. He may have such pride, even though the greatest of acharyas read the Bhagavatam. The greatest of acharyas read the Bhagavad Gita. But I don't really need it. I can get it directly. So this kind of pride can truly destroy a devotee's spiritual life. So when he begins to make offenses against devotees, we call aparad, he may blaspheme the devotees, blaspheme the books, he may talk against different devotees, put different devotees down, not know how to deal with devotees, always speaking harshly, thinking he's so important. So what happens when a devotee does that is very, very disastrous to his spiritual life. It's like his creeper, like the creeper that you see on a tree creeps around. So that creeper begins to wither. It withers because the water of spiritual love is being withdrawn from it. Every time a devotee makes an offense against another devotee, what happens is that Krishna withdraws that mercy that he's been giving him to feel that bliss, that peace, that strength, that freedom. And so the devotee begins to feel less and less peaceful, less and less loving, less and less caring, and is looking to be served, to be loved, to be glorified, to be honored, to receive respect. He's looking for all that. And so when Krishna takes away more and more of the inner joy, the inner strength, the inner love, the inner happiness, what is he left with? Nothing. Emptiness. Just vacuity. And yet the soul by nature is blissful. But it's not feeling its bliss because it's out of touch with the source of bliss, which is Krishna. He's trying to be a Krishna instead of trying to be a servant of Krishna. And in forgetting to be a servant of Krishna, what happens is that he needs to feel some kind of pleasure. Because, as I said, the nature of the soul is to be blissful, to be peaceful, to be strong, to be secure. But he's not feeling that. So where do you go and get it? You go back to where you originally got it from, where you got all your problems from, the forest of the material world. You go back and satisfy, as it says in the first or second sentence here, you go back to sex life. You go back to meat eating. Or you go back because it's tasty. Because it has some pleasure. So the pleasure, of course, when you're very highly spiritualized, it doesn't have any pleasure. It's actually very repugnant. But because you're empty now, or trying to run on empty, as they say, car can't run on empty. And the heart cannot run on empty either. So what it does is it superimposes different kinds of pleasures. Pleasures from the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue. And one becomes again involved in materialistic pleasure seeking and pleasure experiencing. Through the ears, the nose, the tongue. So he gets pleasure now. But this kind of pleasure, unlike spiritual pleasure, causes the living entity to become attached to the material world. And when one is attached to, for example, one particular kind of food, or it may be sexual activity, or it may be some kind of music, when one becomes attached to that and for some reason or other can't get it, he becomes highly frustrated. And when the frustration continues to grow, he becomes very angry. And when the anger continues to grow, he blasts and becomes hostile, hatred, very difficult, very easily irritated. And this person can't get along with anyone because everything irritates him wherever he goes, to whomever he talks. We've all met people like that. Don't bother me. Get out of my face. I don't want to look at you. Even when you do book distribution, so many times persons who say, excuse me, sir, get out of my face. I don't want to look at you. Stay away from me. They have this vexatious mentality. Everything irritates them. Everything disturbs them. And that's because they're not in touch with Krishna. So the person, what happens is that he leaves. He says, there's nothing really here for me. I've been in a big illusion. But really, the illusion that he's had is that he was important. He was valuable. He was great. He was grand. He was big. He was powerful. He was think that was the illusion. So instead of looking at himself as the destroyer of his own true happiness, he believes that he's been an illusion here in spiritual life, that the only real happiness is in the material world. And so he goes back to the material world, engages in all of the activities of the material world, and takes pleasure in the fact that at least I'm normal. I'm doing what everybody else is doing. Yeah, going crazy, falling down, being miserable. So that's what he takes pleasure in. So that's what the material world offers. That attachment that I've just mentioned, that involvement, or that contamination, it causes a person to become miserable. There are the miseries of his own body. Every time a person engages in some kind of physical pleasure, it will be counterbalanced with some pain. That's the law. You can't avoid it. The only way it can be avoided is through penance or austerity. You perform some sin, so you may counteract it, but that will not be the end of it. Then you perform it again. Unless you kill the root of the sin perpetuates itself. So yes, but if you perform some sin and then you counteract it with some austerity, some fasting or whatever, that will be painful also. You can't avoid the pain if you want the pleasure. So life in the material world, as it is mentioned, is like a forest fire. And it burns. And as we become more and more entangled in material nature, in so many different activities, with so many different relationships, in the false identification that I am this body, and with this body, I am here to lord it over this material world. With that idea, as long as I pursue it, misery is written. That is my destiny. Miseries of the body and mind, miseries coming from other living entities, and miseries coming from, of course, the material atmosphere, such as in cataclysms, catastrophes, material nature. So, therefore, what is being said here is that we need to take this Krishna consciousness so very seriously that it is the greatest opportunity for all of us to grow in God realization, to grow closer to Krishna in a loving relationship, to grow closer to his devotees in a loving relationship. This is an opportunity to actually experience real pleasure instead of the false pleasure that we see in the material world. False because it is temporary. It is real in the sense that we experience it, that we feel it, but it is false in the sense that it is here today and gone tomorrow, leaving within us an impression that causes us to want more and more of the same. And if we don't get more and more of the same, then we are frustrated and miserable. And if we get more and more of the same, then what happens is that we may become surfeited. We may become saturated till it actually loses its tang. It's like if you've ever eaten a quart of ice cream. The first few chews are very, very tasty. But as you keep going on, it starts to get flat. Similarly, no matter how much sex you have, how much rock music you have, no matter how many flowers you smell, no matter how many wonderful foods you taste, if you go on and on, they'll become flat. And then where do you go? You go to some other sense pleasure. And then that becomes flat. So one becomes empty. And the secret is that the more pleasure you become involved in, engrossed in, absorbed in, if there's no penance or austerity or some counteraction, often people become very depressed. And the result of the depression is they need something to counteract that. So they go to the doctor and they get the antidepressant. So the antidepressant may help them for a while, and then they need bigger and bigger doses to help them. Consequently, when I go to taking alcohol and become an alcohol addict, a heroin addict, a cocaine addict, any of these, because one needs to get and feel that pleasure that he's lost. And unless he gets that pleasure, he feels empty. He feels life is worthless. He feels he has no purpose. He feels life is really a miserable mess. And he may be rich. He may be have a big position. So many people commit suicide in big positions because they're not really happy. It takes more than beauty. So many beautiful models, they get involved in drugs and they overdose. You know, people who have influence or power commit suicide, or who are very famous, or who are very knowledgeable, big psychiatrists or big professors. They're miserable because they're not in touch with the Supreme Lord consciously. Krishna says, one who is not connected with me in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do it for me, Krishna says. In that way, you'll become God-realized. And in that way, you'll feel real peace, real happiness, real strength, real fulfillment. And every one of us has that opportunity. So, we should always try to feel that this is a gift. Sense that please keep me engaged in your loving devotional service. If you take me out of your service, you might as well destroy my consciousness. Because unless I have devotional service, unless I am conscious of the fact that I am serving you with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my life, with all my mind, unless I'm serving in that spirit, and not serving robotically or mechanically or indifferently or uncaringly, but serving with the full understanding that I have gotten the greatest gift, the greatest, most precious gift in the world. If I am serving with this mentality, then I am fulfilling God's wish for us, namely that we simply serve Him unconditionally, undemandingly, lovingly, with a full consciousness that we are the greatest beneficiaries in the world. If we will serve with that understanding, putting our whole heart, our whole mind into it, not merely doing it as another thing, but as something so precious. A materialist gets a diamond and holds it so tight. Ah, I'm rich, I'm rich, I've got a diamond. Or he's got gold. Look at this gold, I'm rich. And he hugs it to his chest. Similarly, that's the way we have to feel about devotional service. And if we will hug the service to our chest in the sense of feeling that it is a privilege, not that we are doing the temple a favor, but that it is a privilege to serve Krishna and serve His devotees. And if we consider consciously this privilege, even if a devotee treats you indifferently, uncaringly, harshly, still, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is engaged in the service and in his determination to continue in his service. No matter how we are treated, we need to always be thankful that we have the opportunity to serve, serve, and serve more. If we serve in this mentality, conscious love of Krishna and the devotees, we will never fall down. Srila Prabhupada said so often, he says, one of the problems of you young men and women is that you're not afraid of Maya enough. He says, I'm always afraid of Maya, and therefore I'm always depending upon Krishna. As Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, what will happen? You will be lost. So Krishna promises to guide us, direct us, and He has done that. Srila Prabhupada has come with these marvelous books, and we can read them and share them, and in so doing, become uplifted by them, strengthened by them, enlightened by them, enlivened by them, and blissed out by them. So, please, thank you so much for listening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Is there any question or any comment anyone would like to make? And this is open now. Yes, Ganesh Prabhuji. First of all, most important thing is to take shelter of devotees who are not in that condition. That's the most important thing. Devotees who are fully in Krishna consciousness, who are solid as rocks, you know, have good morning program, always chant their rounds, are full of divine bliss, divine peace and strength. And you know that they're in this for the long haul. Now, you have to associate with that kind of a person. That's the first thing. Because his aura, his influence, will begin to cover your bad influence that's on you now. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that one has to get serious in his chanting. Sometimes devotees chant, as I see it quite often when I turn on my internet TV, I see some devotees just chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, kinds of ho-hum type chanting. Get very serious. Get a little bit fired up in the chanting. It's a communication with Krishna. My dear Lord, please engage me in your devotional service. Please keep me engaged. If you don't keep me engaged, I'll be lost. I'll be miserable again, just as I was before I did this. So I'm begging you with all my heart and soul, please. This is the mood of chanting. We think that we're going to be alive for millions of years. And then one day we drop dead. This mentality, yes, in one sense, we will be alive forever. In the soul will be alive, but the body won't. And the body is a means to be used. The material world is a means to be used to get out of this material world and get out of this body now and forever. So those are very important. Chant properly with all your heart and soul. Put your whole self into it. Communicate when you chant, not just chant. And if you communicate, you're in touch with Krishna. So you're talking to Krishna. If you talk to me, you don't talk to me indifferently, turning your head away, looking at the floor. You look me in the eyes when you talk. You express your feelings similarly. Chant with love in the heart. Krishna will feel that, he will hear that, and he will respond to that, and he will fill you with the same joy, the same happiness, the same strength that you had before. And read these books. Read them, read them, read them, because they are just transcendental lights. And if you read these books, What you're doing is you're saturating the mind with pure transcendental knowledge. These are counteractants. It's like poison. You know, you can take an antidote for a poison, and it neutralizes it. You remember in the Mahabharata, Bhima, he got poisoned by Duryodhana, gave him a vegetable poison, and then Bhima, he threw him into the Ganges River, and he sunk, and he was teleported to another another world, namely the world of Patala, where the snakes or the Nagas lived. And the Nagas saw him in their cavern, and they looked at him, and he was an intruder. What is he doing here? Who is he? Of course, this was an arrangement by Krishna. Bhima could not be killed. That was a prophecy Vidura had made. So they began to bite him with their fangs, and as they bit him over and over and over again, the poison that went out from their fangs went into his body and neutralized the vegetable poison that Duryodhana had given him in his food at the feast they had that day. So similarly, as we engage in these processes with all our heart, as with a feeling of gratitude, of thankfulness, that we could lose this. Look at all, go out on Venice Boulevard and see all those who have lost Krishna. Originally, they were all with Krishna. And most of them will never, for billions of years, come back. That could be us. We shouldn't think that's them. That's me. But it doesn't have to be me if I take these processes seriously. And if I am always thankful to Krishna and put my head at his lotus feet, my head at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, and beg them for the mercy to never, never leave, never go away, never discard or regard this process as being something unimportant because maybe we're not very wealthy, maybe we don't have much power. That is never a reason for giving up Krishna consciousness. That is a materialistic thing. But if we see the reality and we beg for the mercy to become better, better in the sense of being purer, then all mercy will continue to come to us. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Is there anyone else who has a question? No? All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And thank you very much. Hare Krishna.